Hey there, it's Melissa Brunetti, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Karma podcast.
Hey there, Karma crew. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Mind Your Own Karma, The Adoption Chronicles. Today, I have a special guest, Miranda Barker. This episode is becoming one of my favorite episodes, so you don't want to miss it. But let me tell you a little bit more about Miranda. Miranda is a licensed social worker, as well as having a master's in social work, and is an adoptive parent, an adoptive sibling, and a therapist. She has experience working as an expectant parent counselor, child protection investigator, and now as a therapist specializing in seeing clients that are part of the adoption constellation. She is a soon-to-be graduate of the PAC Fellowship, which is Permanency and Adoption Competency Certificate, and the host of the Therapist Thrival Guide podcast, a resource for new growing therapists. Here is my interview with Miranda Barker. So we are welcoming Miranda Barker to the show today. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love these unique combos of the triad conversations. You have two adoptive siblings, and then you also have are an adoptive parent, as well as a therapist that is involved in the triad. So super interesting conversation. I can't wait to dive in.
Me too. Yeah.
I thought we would start with your two siblings that were adopted. And do you know why your family chose to adopt?
Yeah. So I'm the oldest of six kids. And so I have three biological siblings. And, you know, when I was 12, my parents just decided, you know, we don't feel like our family is complete and we would like to adopt. In all fairness to them, I think that they had really great hearts about it, but they were also just kind of like, let's save a child, sort of, you know, just kind of like right. the typical
narrative,
I don't know, like adoptive parent view that people will have. And so I was 12 when they started the process. And at the time, my aunt and uncle were living in China and they were actually working for like a nonprofit over there. And so my parents actually started the process with a child in mind. Like they wanted to adopt a specific kid that my family had known. And then that kid's file like was lost. And so my parents were like, you know, we went into this just wanting to adopt. And even though we really had our hearts set on this child, like we could adopt any kid. So then they ended up adopting my brother whose name is Charlie. And then it was like a year and a half later that the agency came back to them and said, hey, we found the file if you guys want to she'll adopt. And so then they adopted that child too. And so that's my brother, that's my brother Calvin. And so I was 17 when we adopted Calvin. And so they're the same age and they have a lot of the same interests, but completely different kids. I mean, just like completely different, super fun. But so that was kind of how they ended up adopting too.
So what was it like growing up? Did you feel different towards those two siblings compared to your biological siblings?
I mean, that's a tricky question to answer because I was so much older than them. And mm-hmm. So it was a different dynamic. I think I was pretty parentified, honestly, as like an older sibling. And so, I did a ton of stuff with them, but it was very, I mean, I was 12 years older than one of them. And so it was just kind of a different dynamic. But they both, for the most part, like blended really well into our family. Like they adapted really well and overall, like they were pretty smooth adoptions. And so, the biggest thing for me though, and this is something that is like one of my soapbox issues when I talk about adoption, and is just how agencies will really do a good job of preparing parents, but they don't do anything to like prepare kids in the families. And so, I mean, like my parents, they went to all the different, you know, like adoption education things. And then they didn't really, I mean, I didn't go to those things, but, and yet mm-hmm. most people felt more comfortable asking the kids kind of the uncomfortable questions instead of my parents. So like, you know, your average adult wouldn't probably go up to my mom and be like, how much did your kid cost? But they would absolutely go up to me and say that. And, you know, just things like that where I think that, I mean, it was so, I love my brothers. It was such a good experience. And like, we're still super close, but like, that was really hard as a teenager to like suddenly go from four kids to six kids. And then like, just suddenly have so many really uncomfortable questions asked of me all the time.
So you were saying that you felt like your parents were, educated for, you know, to have the kids. Did they talk about adoption trauma to them? I mean, what kind of education did they get? Do you know?
Yeah. Such a good question. I mean, I think that they went through more of like the grief and loss lens. I don't think that they got as much. I think at the time they didn't get as much education around how traumatic adoption is. And I think that as we have, you know, as time has gone by and we listen to more adoptees share their experiences, we can really understand how traumatic adoption is. But, you know, at the time, I think that they got some of that, but certainly not as much as is being talked about now.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's so hard for society to grasp that adoption is traumatic?
Oh man, that's such a good question. I mean, I think that for the longest time, most of the people who were talking about adoption were adoptive parents. And so they were the ones that were saying, I have this beautiful child. I'm so happy. Like, this is wonderful. Adoption has made my family whole or complete. Or, you know, you hear them say these wonderful things about adoption. And as an adoptive parent myself, like, yeah, I love my daughter. Like, yes, adoption has been great for me. But like, at the same time, I think as time has gone by, we're listening to more adoptees, where adoptees are being more vocal and birth parents are also being more vocal. And they're saying, you know what? Like, yeah, adoption was great maybe for you, but like it was a massive loss or a massive, massive traumatic event for a lot of people. And so I think that as the narrative change, well, as the speaker changes, as we're listening to different voices, I think the narrative is changing a little bit more too. And we're understanding more about the different issues of adoption.
What I see most is people wanting to kind of skip over, you know, the separation part, the adoption trauma part, and be like, but you have a great family, so, you know, everything's good, right? And it's like, they don't want to validate that trauma for some reason. I don't know if it's because it's very uncomfortable. It's, you know, something they don't want to talk about. It's something they want to stay ignorant about. Not really sure where that comes from, but it just seems like people want to skip over that.
Okay,
you know.
Well, absolutely. And I think that a lot of the people who are saying like, oh, adoption is such a wonderful, beautiful thing, or like, you're so lucky to be adopted, things like that, I think that they are not, I mean, they're just not seeing the whole picture of adoption. And they're also not recognizing, you know, how the loss that has to happen in order for adoption to be there. I think it's harder to it's less comfy to talk about that. It's more fun to talk about the beautiful family or something, but it's harder to talk about the difficulty that got you there.
Yeah. It's funny when, you know, you have your own child, you know, that connection that you have with them, you know, biologically, and to be able to just kind of gloss over that when it comes to adopted kids, it just kind of blows my mind. I'm like, you know, if you've had a child, you know, like, do you think you could just hand your child over to somebody and just implant them over here and everything's normal, you know?
I'm glad you said that, because I think, so I'm someone who, my husband and I adopted first, and then we decided to grow our family biologically. And so we hadn't even tried to get pregnant. We just decided we wanted to adopt first. It's a whole nother story, but, and then, so we adopted and then last year we found out that we decided we're going to try to get pregnant, got pregnant. And I think that the layers of loss just like hit that much harder once I actually went through having a biological baby too. Like, I think that, like I mean, I feel so connected. I feel so blessed. I love my daughter. And like when I actually went through pregnancy, when I actually went through some of these different things, it made me that much more heartbroken, I think, over like just the amount of loss that, that birth parents go through and that adoptees go through in order to be a part of families.
Yeah. Well, as an adoptee, I thank you for validating that on the podcast today. Yeah. Do you think your siblings felt safe talking about their feelings about adoption in your family, like to your parents and,
you know,
if they had any, I don't know.
So they, yes and no. Like, I think both of them had different experiences in the sense of like, how they've processed their adoptions and the amount of loss. And so, like, I would say one of my brothers, he doesn't like to talk about adoption. He just kind of like pushes it out of his mind. I think it's uncomfortable for him. And my parents, I think, were always kind of the people who were like, I mean, we'll talk, I mean, they're adopted. We talk about adoption. We talk about gotcha days. You know, they do kind of the typical adoptive parent things.
Yeah.
And then they, but they, I think they also are typical in the sense of like, they'll talk to us when they're ready, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't think that that's really the way that adoptive parents should go about it. I think that in some ways you have to take the lead and you have to show that you're a safe person to talk to. And, and by the way, one of my other brothers, he is more open to talking about it. Like, he and I have had conversations about, do you think I have birth siblings? Or, you know, like, what do you think happened? Or, you know, like, what information do you know? Because I mean, they were 7 when I got my bachelor's in social work and I was working in the adoption world. And so I think that they kind of viewed me as somebody that like they could probably just, you know, vocalize some of these questions to, and I wouldn't be judgmental. Or, you know, I know a lot of birth parents. And so they would hear me talking about birth parents, and they would hear me talking about, you know, different like, oh, I'm facilitating a support group for birth parents and, you know, stuff like that. So I think that they would hear me talk about it so regularly that they were more open to talking to me about it. But I don't know. I think most adoptive parents can definitely do better in terms of, you know, like being the person that leads that conversation or being a safe person to talk about some of that stuff.
Yeah. But I think that's part of the narrative that they're told too, though, is, you know, kind of don't talk about it, you know, and
oh yeah. Uh-huh.
The whole, you know, this is great. And, you know, it'll be great.
Right.
It'll be part of your family. No problems.
Well, and I'll say too, like one of the things, so my daughter is 3, and one of the things that was so fascinating to me when I was pregnant was we just talked about this baby in my tummy all the time. She talked about it all the time because this was her baby. Like, she's like baby doll obsessed. And so she knew that this baby was coming and that this was her baby. And like, we have had so many conversations just in the last year. So my son is almost 6 months old, but so many conversations in the last year about how she didn't grow in my tummy and how, like, I think that as adoptive parents, we have a responsibility to weave conversations in there, weave adoption into your conversations in a variety of different ways. And so for us, that looked like, you know, talking about that. Or, gosh, there was this recently, she and I were driving somewhere and, she said something about, like, she asked me if there was another baby in my tummy. And I said, no, there's not, you know. And she, and then we started talking about birthdays. And then she said, well, she asked me a question along the lines of, well, where was I before my birthday? Or like, you know, started to kind of ask questions or, because I had said, oh, that was where I was. That's where we spent my birthday. And she goes, was I there? And I said, no, you weren't born yet. And she goes, was I in your tummy? And I said, no, baby, you weren't in my tummy. You didn't grow. You remember, you grew in your birth mom's tummy. And she, like, you could just see the wheels turning. And she goes, but Will was in your tummy. And I was like, yeah, he was in my tummy. And then she goes, well, so is my birth mom in India? And I said, she is in India. Like, I mean, just, she's like at such a fun age where she's connecting those dots.
Yeah.
And she's starting to realize. And so I think that I've been just so impressed with how much she's able to understand and how much she's able to really connect to the dots. Because I think that a lot of times we as adoptive parents don't bring things up because we think they're too young, or we think that they
won't remember.
Exactly. And I think that kids just, they understand way more than we give them credit for. And if it's something that's kind of a normal part of your conversations or a normal part of, you know, your everyday life, then, I mean, it's going to be less weird to talk about when you're older or when you get bigger.
Yeah. To always know is a huge deal for adoptees, you know, to not be sat down and having the conversation, you know, that here we thought, you know, you were our parents and now we find out you're not. And well, you do remember that. Like, that is,
Melissa, I know that you are an adoptee, but do you remember that? Did you have a moment where you found out that you were adopted?
No, I always knew. Okay, my mom told the story. Yeah. Good. No, my mom told me a story all the time about how they went and picked me up and, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, like, she'd be like, I was changing your diaper and telling you the story, like, as a baby, you know? So yeah, I don't ever remember being told. I was just new.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. That's right. Yeah. So you're an adoptive parent. You kind of started to allude to why you adopted. You want to tell us?
Yeah. So my husband and I we got together when we were 18, and I feel like we joke all the time about how we grew up together and we're going to grow old together, and how when we first got married, we were like, I don't know if we're going to have kids. Like, I don't know, not really sure. We're having so much fun, just the two of us. And then it was around when we were kind of like, okay, we'll talk about this more once we've been married for 5 years. And it was around the 5 year mark. It might've been even the 6 year mark, where we were like, okay, we want to become parents, but I don't know if pregnancy is right. I don't know if like having a biological, I don't know if this is the way we want to do it. And at the time I was working in child protection, and I was like, man, there's certainly a need for foster parents. I don't know if I was only 25 at the time. So I was like, I don't know if we're really like qualified to do that. And I don't know if we can do that. And we looked into it. We went to some like different informational things, because we felt strongly that, like, you know, we have the love. We could do this. I mean, I have, with my background and with his like never ending bucket of patience, we were like, we could do this. And so we talked about it. It felt right. And then ultimately, as we were going to like the different informational sessions, we were like, I don't know. It's like, being in my role as a child protection worker, I don't know if I'm comfortable also being a foster parent through this. And like, and just kind of this dual role. I didn't live in the county that I worked for, but there were enough connections and things that I was like, I don't know if I feel comfortable like having, like, with my colleagues knowing how much money I make, or like being able to see my home study, or, you know, like, or being out on an investigation and then like taking the kid home. Like, that never would have happened, but it just, there were so many things that we were like, this just doesn't, we love this, but this doesn't feel right for the stage of life that we're in. And so then we started looking into we just started talking about other types of adoption. And I had worked as a birth parent counselor for a couple of years prior to that. And an expectant parent counselor is like a dual role. And, you know, I didn't feel right about that either. I knew that there were so many families waiting for babies that it felt like it was almost like an upside down program, where I was like, there's plenty of families. There's plenty of people who are willing or wanting to adopt an infant. And neither of us really felt like we needed to go through the infant stage. And so ultimately we started looking at international adoption, and both of my brothers were adopted internationally. And so we were like, you know, this feels right. Like, we could adopt and like instantly have other people in our family that looks like them, we could instantly have, like, we have a big support network of people from India and China. So we're looking at both of those programs. And then since I was only 25, I wasn't allowed to adopt from China yet. And so we would have needed to wait 5 more years. And so then started pursuing India adoption because you could do that when you're 25. So
I didn't know that.
And so it kind of came down to some logistics. Like, I think that we were like, okay, you know, we're into the international adoption. We're both young and like have traveled extensively, love learning about other cultures. And we live in a community of a lot of Indian families too. And so it just felt like a good fit for us.
So this is going to be kind of a hot topic question, but you mentioned that you adopted without debt or doing having to do any fundraising that you told me.
Yeah.
So you said that was super important to you guys. So tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so I have a couple of friends who were adoptees or are adoptees. And I also, after working in the adoption field, like as an expectant parent counselor, as a birth parent counselor, I would hear a lot of the same questions of people. And I mean, I don't say this to be like, no one should, you know, fundraise or do any of these things. I'm just saying it didn't really feel right for us because I had a lot of people say things like, well, why are you fundraising for your adoption when you could just be fundraising or donating that money so that a birth parent could continue raising their baby? And I think I just heard that all the time, just, and not the same question, but similar questions. And it really got like struck something in me because I didn't want to, you know, like, first off, I also didn't want my daughter to be able to like look back on social media posts of me being like $8,000 down. I think that anytime you start talking about money when it comes to adoption, I think that it detracts a little bit away from like what adoption is. And I think it almost commodity. It turns children into like a commodity. And it just made me feel really icky. And so we talked about how, like, if we're going to adopt, we are not going to fundraise because I don't want my family members to be thinking about how much my daughter cost. I mean, if you're watching this, I just did, you know, quotation marks,
the air quotes.
I didn't want that to be in anyone's mind. I wanted people to be excited about our daughter joining our family and not like see that part of it. I don't know. I think that kids are so much more than just something that you can buy. And it feels so icky to say that, but like, it was something that was important to us. And so we saved for a long time before we started the process. And then I like would spend every weekend applying for grants and things. So we did get some grants from organizations, but those were like just from the organization straight to our agency, not anything that like ever touched our accounts or nothing that we really like did beyond, you know, doing that.
So I'm guessing that this is a closed adoption with your daughter. Do you know, did they tell you anything about her biological family, why she was put up, anything?
It is a closed adoption, which I wish it wasn't. Like I spent, that was one of our biggest, like, do we really want to do international adoption? Because majority of those are closed, because I do have such a heart for birth parents. And I know that for a child to have a connection to their birth family and to know where they came from and have like even just a sliver of medical history or like an idea of more of their identity, it can be so helpful for them in navigating their own identities. And so it is closed, unfortunately. We did receive some paperwork though by accident. And so we do know some information about them. So like we have first names and we have like a village that they're from. And so I'm really hopeful that someday we'll be able to find them and reach out to them. But I also know that like culturally, that is just something that can be really hard to navigate. And so it's something that we haven't pursued yet, but hopefully at some point we will.
So how old was your daughter when you adopted her?
18 months.
And yeah. Did you notice any trauma with her when you brought her over here? I mean, taking her from her country and people that, you know, like you said, you have some people that look like her, but still, like the language, maybe even everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's so fascinating because, I mean, as a professional that works in adoption, works now as a therapist with a lot of adoptees and adoptive parents and birth parents, you can kind of go into situations like this and know, like, okay, this is going to be hard. Like, okay, there's going to be things that we're going to see. Like, but I think that it's just a whole another ball game when you're in it, right? And so, I mean, she has some medical needs. And so I think that those were like, it's technically like a special needs adoption.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
At the time?
Okay. Yeah. We purposely went into it, wanting a special needs adoption. And so, and she's perfectly healthy, doing great. I mean, I think the biggest thing that we noticed right away was just how she was pretty behind developmentally, super normal for being in institutional care. And just like physically super tiny. Like, I think that just when we adopted her at like 18, when we first met her at 18 months, she was only 14 pounds. And, and like, yeah. And my son, who's 6 months old, is like 17 pounds. So it's just like, I mean, it's crazy how she's still, I mean, she's three and she's 22 pounds. And so just like has taken a lot to catch up. And I know that you're asking more about like, you know, mentally, like trauma, that sort of thing. But I think that those were just such a hard, like a big piece of her story. Mm-hmm. And then even when we met her, it is the most bizarre thing to meet a child and be like, that's my daughter. And then take her from the people that she knows and loves. Like, oh my gosh, it is the hardest thing I will probably ever do in my entire life. And, we were so lucky that the orphanage that it's called a SAW in India, that the SAW that we adopted from, really allowed us to do more of like a transition. And so we were able to visit her over several days and like spend time with her and kind of spend time with her caregivers. And that was really precious because then I think she got to know us a little bit more and it wasn't as like so horrible that we just like showed up and took her. So I was really grateful from that, from just like a trauma lens. And then the first few days, she was just really quiet, really reserved. And then it was like, I mean, the fourth day we were at our hotel and it was like a light switched. Like, she was a completely different kid. She started laughing and talking and smiling, but it was like, I mean, I'm amazed that it had only taken those few days, but it was just crazy how she went from being uncomfortable, feeling us out, kind of trying to figure us out, to being like, okay, I think they're okay. I think that they're safe. And, you know, I mean, even now, like, we'll see certain regressions with, you know, around different times of year or like different big events or transitions. She's been through a ton of transition in the last year having a new baby. And so, we certainly see some of those things. And I think that we just like keep in mind, you know, like there's always going to be more under the surface going on than your like neurotypical or your like not adopted child. And so, but overall, like, she has just thrived, like just been doing so well. And it's really been incredible to see, how quickly she's, you know, learned the language. And, we took several months, like 5 months of Kannada lessons before we went to India, which is the language that she, like her native language. And so we were able to speak some Kannada to her when we were there, and we were really lucky to be able to stay in India for about 6 weeks too. I think a lot of adoptive parents just, you know, kind of minimize the time that they're in country, but we really just wanted to soak it up. And we were like, when will there ever be a time in our lives where we can just leave our jobs and go live in India for a short, like that amount of time, and kind of get to know the people that are taking care of our daughter and the people in her culture better. I mean, there's just nothing like you can prepare as much as you want, but you know,
yeah,
being in country and being a part of and just like a student of the culture there, I think is just unlike anything you can really prepare for. But so I mean, to answer your question, like, yeah, there's certainly going to be lifelong traumas and losses and things that will continually come up. But I think that overall, she's just been doing super well, and she's amazed us at how well she's kind of grown and adapted and learned.
With your background and everything, was there anything that still kind of surprised you or blindsided you when you finally did adopt?
That's a good question. I think like I remember going through the home study process, like even before we met her, and being like, oh my word, this is invasive. And that sounds silly because I used to write home studies. Like Melissa, I wrote home studies. I knew what went into those. But like, yeah, until you're on the other side of the table and you're like, oh my word, they're asking us a lot of questions. It's really funny. But I never worked in international adoption. And I actually, like, in hindsight, am really I'm glad I never did, because then I could really go through the process and not be the expert. I could be like, I could really rely on our social worker because she was the expert. And I think that that was really humbling and really helpful to me, because I knew that, you know, there's going to be things that I'm not prepared for that. I think I just like went into it knowing that. And so that was really helpful. But, you know, I'm currently in a fellowship right now that's called the Permanency and Adoption Certificate or Competency Certificate through the University of Minnesota. And it's a year-long fellowship. And I was in one of their sessions just last month, and they were talking about sleep issues, and they were talking about common issues that we see with adoptees. And I kind of had this light bulb moment, and I'm like embarrassed to say this a little bit, but I had this moment where I was like, my daughter has been having trouble sleeping recently. And I just like kind of chalked it up to, she's three. She's just having, you know, she's getting up from her bed all the time. And in the session, they were talking about, you know, it's super common throughout an adoptee's lifetime to have trouble sleeping, because when they're really little, they're used to being in, you know, a big room with a bunch of kids and like having a bunch of stuff going on. And even like the fact that like our nervous systems have to get to a certain place where they can sleep. I mean, there's so many different things where it's like, and so I was sitting in this session, and I was like, oh my gosh, my poor baby, like she's been having trouble sleeping. And I just kind of had, for some reason, taken off like the adoptee lens, had taken off that lens and just been like, she's a 3-year-old having trouble sleeping. And that was so good for me to even just have that moment, because I was like, I texted my husband right then, and I was like, oh my word, we need to be letting her sleep with us. Like we need to be like, we cannot let our guard down in some of these things. Like I know she's doing really well, and it's so easy for us to be like, she's amazing. But man, we need to do better about this. We need to be thinking about how adoption continues to affect someone throughout their life cycle. And I think that we kind of got a little bit lazy and let our guard down a little bit on that. And so
I had a conversation with my adoptive mom kind of about that. She's like, how do you know if what is happening in their life is, you know, because of their adoption? And it's like, I don't really know how to answer that, but I just said, when, you know, there's, 100 adoptees and 80% of them, have this tendency or whatever, it's kind of like, well, it's probably, probably.
And I think we should assume that it is in some ways though, too, because I think that if we assume that it's not, it can be harmful. And so it's probably better to just assume that it is.
Right. Yeah. How did you get into the adoption field? Is it because of your siblings or?
Mostly it went back to working because of my siblings. I think I was super used to having social workers in and out of my house during that adoption process, like during my teenage years, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I was always someone who, you know, wanted to help people, wanted to work for nonprofits. I was a pretty avid volunteer at like the Salvation Army near my house. And so I just had a great mentor there who was a social worker. And she was like, you just need, I graduated from high school, wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was continuing to work there and volunteer there. And she was like, you just need to go to school for social work, because that's going to kind of give you a lot of different options that are all kind of relatively within your values. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So then I went to school for social work, my undergrad degree, and I interned at an adoption agency. And so it was kind of a combination of, oh, I should intern at this place because, I think at the time it was like near campus and I knew some people that worked there. So I was like, oh, that will work out really well. And I have like some knowledge of adoption. And so ended up interning there, got a job there right out of undergrad, and then decided that I wanted to work more specifically with birth parents. And so then that's when I went back to school, got my master's in social work, with like a dual concentration in child welfare and clinical social work, and then ended up working as an investigator and specifically with birth parents for several years.
Wow. That's an intense background.
I mean,
you're definitely qualified.
I love it. Oh man. I mean, it's just, I think I worked in child protection for the exact right amount of time. Like I worked in adoption for about 3 years, and then I worked in child protection for 4 years. And I was like, you know, I think that was the right amount of time. I think if I had stayed there longer, I would have started to feel burnt out by the system. Mm-hmm. But I think I was there long enough to really make a difference in some of my clients' lives and for it to make a difference in my life too. And so decided to leave that role and become a therapist 2 years ago.
Yeah. So let's talk about your practice a little bit. You deal with the triad, and what are some of the common core struggles that you see in your practice when talking to adoptees, and what are some of the things that you see that help them work through that?
That's a good question. Well, when I first started working as a therapist, I worked with a lot of kids, and I worked with mostly kid adoptees, and what I was seeing a lot of was like anger issues and behavioral issues. And I think that that's really common because kids use behavior as language. Mm-hmm. And so if they're having some big behaviors, it means that they're processing something that they probably don't have the language to really do, like be able to verbalize yet. That's and huge, so, yeah. And so I worked with kids in that way for a while. And honestly, just being able to give them a space that's safe to talk about what they've been through, how they're trying to make sense of the world was really what was helpful for them. I mean, we did a lot of play therapy. We did a ton of like sand tray therapy. I think sand tray is really helpful for adoptees. Any sort of like sensory type thing. I mean, it just, the sand can be really helpful in that too. And so I did a lot of life book work as well. And then I don't know if you're familiar with the tools. They're called words and stories, or words and pictures, sorry. And they're kind of like a comic strip. And it's essentially like you make a comic strip, and it's to help, you know, share a part of the child's story with them. So all of the kids I worked with knew that they were adopted, but a lot of times we would use a words and pictures tool, and you can Google it. Like, you can see examples of these online, but we would use that tool to discuss like why birth mom's not around anymore, or to explain addiction to kids, or to talk about, you know, how they joined their family. I worked with a lot of foster kids and foster youth. And so, or kids that became, that were adopted through the foster care system. So a lot of times we use that tool to just help a child make sense of what had happened. And I found that that was really helpful as well. Because again, I mean, kids will process what's going on somehow. And so a lot of times it was just, you know, processing it through play or through, or giving them the language and the tools to kind of understand what had happened. So that was kind of a lot of what I did with kids. Now I actually work mostly with like college students. It's funny, my, that has just like slowly changed into that. But yeah, I work with a lot of college students, and it's such a unique time in their lives because they have this layer of, you know, like when you're 18, you're trying, or, you know, 18, 19, 20, 22, you're trying to figure out your place in this world. You're trying to make meaning of what's next. What do I want to do? And you are faced with this, with like a lot of really huge decisions and big transitions. And I find that for adoptees, that that time can be so hard too, because you, you're no longer living with your adoptive parents. And so I think that you're just, you're making sense of who you are without them. And so I love this age range. Like, it's just, it's so cool to see them coming out of the fog, recognizing what stage of coming out of the fog they're in. And even just like being like a facilitator, or even just like walking with that, with them through that and validating their experiences is so valuable. Because I don't know if this was your story or not, but like for so many adoptees, they are, it's like, it's around high school, college that they're starting to kind of question their adoption and starting to kind of question, you know, like, is that really a good thing? Or, you know, like, why am I feeling this way? Or, you know, I think that that's a really common, like those big life transitions are a really common time for adoptees to kind of start to move into like coming out of the fog in some ways. And so I just, I love that age range. It's really, it's really cool to kind of just help them through some of those big transitions.
You were kind of talking about the stages of the fog. Is there like a standardized stage? I haven't seen it, but
I mean, my gosh. Yeah. I have a handout that I give to some of the adoptees that I work with. That is so cool. I will send it to you and you can like link it in your show notes or something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be great That'd at be like awesome. Talking off the cuff about it, but, and it's not my research, but it's really cool because it's 8 stages, I believe. And it kind of moves through, it's similar to the adoptee. It's, there's a similar model called the adoptee consciousness model. And I can't quite remember her name, but I think it's Ja Ra Kim. But if you look up Harlow's Monkey on Instagram, she's an adoptee and a transracially adopted individual and has done a ton of research on this topic and like the stages of coming or like going through the fog. And so her whole, you know, research is based on something called the adoptee consciousness model. And I can send you a link to that as well, because
That'd be great.
It's really fascinating stuff, especially for, I think like college aged students, it's really cool. But I have the 8 stages of coming out of the fog that I'll send you, because I think it just does a really nice job of talking about, you know, here's where you might be questioning, or here's where you might be finding acceptance, or here's some of like the stages of grief you might be going through, and you know, that sort of stuff. And so I think it's really a cool handout to use with clients.
So I'm getting started to start a somatic practice. Do you see somatics or do you use somatic therapy at all?
I'm not a somatic practitioner, but you know, I am so fascinated by it. I think it works so well with this population. I love that you're doing that, but I love that you're doing somatic. I think that's super, super prevalent with this population.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of a missing piece. I have a lot of clients that are say there's just still something there. There's something there. Like, I've worked through so much in talk therapy and it's great,
yeah,
but there's like a missing something down in there somewhere. You know, I hear that a lot. It was talk about, you know, everybody has a healing combination and it's more than one thing, I think, a lot of times. And then, you know, you might start with one therapy and then find mm-hmm. something else that's going to get you to the next level. So it's always changing. And I always just tell people, yeah. be curious about the process and be open to, you know, trying something new that might get you to that next level. But mm-hmm. I feel like it takes a village, you know, and all of our yeah. expertises to kind of come together for people to get that healing combination. Well, what were some of the frustrations? You talked a little bit about them, but what were some of the frustrations that you had working in the adoption field and in the child protection field?
Yeah. So I think that some of my main frustrations were kind of the reasons that people went into adoption. I mean, I think I talked about that a little bit, where it's like, my husband and I, when we were talking about adoption or foster care or how we wanted to start our family, I think something that was a part of the conversation was, well, we'll probably adopt at some point. And I, after working with over 100 families in the adoption process and seeing how many of them chose adoption as like a plan B or like a way to kind of like round out your family after you've already had biological kids or after you've you know, experienced infertility, I just kept thinking about how that has got to affect adoptees. Like, it's got to know that you frankly were maybe a plan B for sure. Like, oh my gosh, I just, nobody yeah. should experience that. Nobody should think that, you know, that my parents only adopted me because they couldn't get pregnant or something mm-hmm. like that. And mm-hmm. so when my husband and I were talking about starting the adoption process, I was like, if we think we're going to adopt someday, maybe we should just do it first, because I would hate to find out that we're infertile I want my kids to know, I want my daughter to know that she was my first choice. She was 100% my first choice. If I couldn't get pregnant afterwards, that's okay. I had her, like, she's all I wanted. And so that was one of my biggest frustrations going into, or as I was working in the adoption field, was because it was a lot of the same story of, we tried a million different things and then we decided to adopt. And it just never felt like that was right. And I know that there are people listening to this that are like, that was my only option. And I hear you and I get you. Yeah. And, but I think that it's still something to grapple with. And I think that as adoptive parents, we have to be able to grapple some of the hard conversations and the hard topics. Yeah. And I know yeah. that that's going to challenge some people, but it's important to think yeah. about.
Yeah. And adoptee circles, we talk about that a lot. What are the reasons that you're choosing to adopt, and have you dealt with those?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because that's huge. Mm-hmm. Trying to put a Band-Aid on nope. infertility or whatever the situation is by placing another child there, that's yeah. going to cause a whole big can of worms.
Well, no, that was, as an adoption worker, I would have the same conversation with so many families. I would say, I don't feel right about signing this until you've gone through therapy, because I think that you still have some unresolved wounds.
That's
and I
awesome.
Think that this is still something that, even if it's not, adoption is not going to fix infertility. It's not the answer to infertility. And it's also not the answer to, I have three boys and now I want a girl. You know, there's just,
yes.
that's not what it is either. And yeah. so, I know adoptive parents are like, shut up, Miranda, but you know, you have to be able to listen to what yes. adoptees are saying. And that's what adoptees are saying.
It is and what they're so, saying.
No, I want my daughter to know that she was 100% the first choice and was the one all along. But yeah. But you know what's funny, actually, on a side note, once when we started announcing that we were pregnant, you would not believe how many people were like, you know, they just assumed that we were infertile. So they would say things like, see, you just needed to adopt and then you'd get pregnant, or, you know, say
oh,
things like,
yeah.
I don't know, just crap like that.
Yeah.
And then I would have no problem calling it out and being like, that wasn't the issue. Nope, we chose to adopt. Nope. Like, I mean, I just wanted to make it very clear. Like,
yeah.
My goodness, the assumptions people make are kind of crazy. But
how did people react when you told them that weren't going to sign anything off until they got some therapy? How did they take that?
I think that if, as someone who's not been through infertility myself, like I think that I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I think that they could often tell that they were still holding on to it. And I think that I could usually say in a way that's like, I know I'm your social worker and I know that I'm writing this home study for you, but I'm also like looking out for your future kid, like, because they're who's important to in all of this. And I'd have a conversation similar if they were, you know, they're making poor financial decisions, or if they were, if their relationship was on the rocks or something. Like I had to tell people to go to couples therapy more times than I can count. But if I was having a conversation and saying, you know, what I'm noticing is you're still getting kind of worked up when we're talking about this, when we're talking about your infertility journey, or, you know, I'm noticing that this is still something that is maybe a little bit raw, and I want you to feel really ready to parent. And I want you to not necessarily, you know, put a lot of this on your future child. I want to make sure that you are in the best possible place to be a parent. And so what I would usually actually say is, I would really love to be able to speak to the progress that you've made in therapy in your home study. And so that's how I would usually phrase it. I would say, I want to be able to speak good. To the progress. And I mean, like, who's going to say no to that?
Right.
But like, I mean, I also had supervisors that were super supportive and also really on the same page as me. So I knew that they would support my decision with that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great to hear. What advice do you have for those thinking about adoption? And what questions would you say they should be asking themselves before they adopt?
Number one advice, you have to be listening to adoptees. Like, by listening to this podcast, I think that you are taking a good first step by listening to adoptees and listening to like some of the core issues around adoption, because it's not something that you can just dismiss or just, you know, expect that won't happen to you, or expect that that's not going to be your experience, because it most likely will. And you also need to, you need to be centering their voices in all of this, because that's what actually matters. I mean, I think that there are so many amazing adoptees on Instagram, or, you know, on social media, or have podcasts that are really sharing a lot of the hard topics that you need to be wrestling with before you're going through this, because it's kind of like the tough love that I would have to give to the adoptive parents that I worked with. You have to be ready to be a parent. This isn't something that you can just like hope that some of this stuff resolves later down the road, or like, you know, hope that you find some friends that are part of your child's culture, or hope that you have to put in the work now, because it's not, when you become a parent, it gets a whole lot harder to make friends. It gets a whole lot harder to read some of these books. It gets a whole lot harder to go to therapy. And so it's like, do the work now and listen to those voices. You know, I think that that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Do you, in your therapy practice, do you see people on Zoom, or are you in person?
I mostly see people in person, but I do telehealth as well.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us how people can find you if they want to, and then tell us you have a podcast. So tell us about that too.
Yeah. No. Okay. So I'm licensed in the state of Minnesota, so I can only see clients that are in Minnesota. But if you are looking for a therapy recommendation or an adoption competent therapist, I highly recommend that you look at the Permanency and Adoption Competency Certificate, the PAC program, because you can actually find therapists that have gone through that program nationwide that are considered adoption competent. And I can send you the link as well.
I was going to say, can you send me that link, please?
Yeah, because it's so crucial to find an adoption competent therapist. I'm not currently taking clients. It really depends. The majority of my role, so I, me take a step back. So I work at LA Mental Health, which is a therapy practice that was started in Minnesota, and they actually are franchising nationally. So they have over 200 locations nationwide in like 40 states. And so I work for their corporate location. And so what I do is I actually educate other therapists now. I have like the coolest job ever where
nice.
I get to have a podcast called The Therapist Thrival Guide. And I get to teach new therapists, you know, like how to navigate this, because there's so many things that they don't teach you in grad school and so many things that we're trying to figure out as new therapists that, so my podcast is a really big help for that. And I can send you the link to include in your description as well. But yeah, if you're struggling, if you're an adoptee, if you're an adoptive parent, if you're a birth parent, like by all means, please reach out and find support through either therapy and an adoption competent therapist, or there are so many amazing, really cool nonprofits that are there to support birth parents. Bellis is a local one that is incredible, that's doing a ton of really amazing work that I've had the privilege to volunteer with. And there are so many cool organizations that you can find support through, because you're not alone in this experience. And I mean, adoption is tough. There's a lot of really wonderful, amazing things, and there's also a lot of really tough things. And so I hope that if you're listening, you'll find support and you'll find people around you that can validate your experience and help you through this.
Yeah.
I just said so much. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, okay, no, good. That was perfect. Great. But I just want to say, I just want to thank you from an adoptee, because you have validated so many things, you know, coming from the adoptive parent, just your therapy background, and seriously on the right track. I just want to let you know that you're hitting all those, and your daughter's a very lucky girl to have you as a parent. I hope you're open to me contacting you if I have people that are struggling, because I'm always like, contact me if you're struggling. And I do have some resources, but if I'm stuck, I would love to get in touch with you. And
absolutely.
We've got a network and help. So I appreciate that. So anyway, thank you for coming on today. Yep. It was a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I can't tell you how healing it was for me personally to listen to Miranda today. It was truly a treat for me. And again, I just want to thank her for her honesty and the wisdom that she is bringing to the adoption constellation as an adoptive parent. So important, and the work she's doing in bringing all of that together, her experiences in her own life, along with her degrees, and really making a difference in the adoptee community. I love that she's not afraid to say the hard things, that she says it in a way that people want to listen and respond in a thoughtful way. And that is a great combination for a therapist. I wish we can just clone her and have a bunch of Mirandas. and I love that she puts adoptees first in her work and was courageous enough to tell adoptive parents when she saw red flags that maybe they needed some counseling for something before they adopted. And I just love that she wasn't afraid to say that and advocate for that little adoptee that was going to come into the family. So thank you again, Miranda, for coming on the show. If you want to get some of the resources Miranda was talking about, there are links in the show notes for some of the things she mentioned. If you are looking for an adoptee therapist, an adoption-informed therapist, please get in contact with me. I have some resources for you. If you want to get in touch with Miranda, I can help you with that as well. I also do somatic therapy. So if you are struggling, if you are feeling like there's that little piece missing, get in touch with me. We can do a 15-minute free discovery call and see if somatic therapy is right for you. As always, take what you need and leave what you don't. And always remember to mind your own karma. And I will see you next time.